Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/stuff today for details.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at How Stuff Works. Welcome to the podcast. Today I have sitting next to me, as he is usually sitting in his normal chair, senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Smooth, Paulette.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah.
Well, this is a little surprising to be talking to you about this particular podcast, because it was actually once going to be part of another podcast, and then we found out it was that half was the length of a normal podcast.
Yeah. This was one of those times where we think, hey, we can talk about this for 20 minutes, and it turns out we're right. We can talk about it for 40, in fact.
Yep.
So we decided to cut short the last podcast. Now, of course, if you listen to the last podcast, it was all about Steve Jobs. And this podcast, we're going to talk about kind of a counterpart to Steve Jobs, good old William H. Gates.
The third.
Or Billy Hank, as I like to call him.
Yeah. Now, the reason we picked these two guys, for those of you who weren't listening for the last podcast, is because, you know, they're both the same age. They started companies when they were 20 years old, back in 1975. There are a lot of parallels between these two giants in the tech industry.
They're both college dropouts.
Yeah, exactly. Which is one of those things that I didn't even realize about both of them. I mean, there's so many parallels between these guys, and yet they're so different.
Right.
And last time we got so wrapped up in talking about Steve Jobs and all his idiosyncrasies that we
didn't have enough
time to get to Bill Gates. So let's
dive right in, shall we?
Sure.
So Gates, he grew up over in Seattle, and he was very interested in computers at an early age. He actually went to an elementary school where he learned about software and programming when he was 13 years old. And that was pretty much
what sealed the deal. He decided that computers were really, really cool, and he wanted to know all about them and work with them. And boy, did he.
Yeah, as we mentioned in the last podcast, in the early 70s, people didn't have computers on their desktops if you weren't around for that time period.
Right.
This, you know, this personal computer thing is actually really, it's because of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs
right.
and a lot of other very, very important people who worked with them. But I mean, these guys were at the forefront of this. And people weren't interested in having a computer in their house.
Well, they didn't even think it was possible.
Yeah.
Because back at that time, you were mainly talking about big mainframe computers that would take up an entire floor of a building.
Oh, no kidding.
And not something that you would be able to fit in your house, much less on a desk.
Yeah.
And it's really due to the work of people like Gates and Jobs that changed. Now, Jobs, of course, he was really focusing on building the hardware, building an actual computer system from the ground up. Whereas Gates was more interested in the software part of the equation, less interested in building physical machines. He wanted to make the stuff that would run on the machines that other people were building.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, Gates was really into programming, and as a Harvard freshman in 1973, he was already working on an operating system.
He also met someone who had become very important in Microsoft's history as well.
Oh, yeah? Who was that?
That would be Steve Ballmer.
Oh, yeah. He mentioned that, didn't he? The guy who was always down the hall shouting, developers, developers,
right, exactly.
Developers.
If you don't know what Paulette is referring to here, I suggest you go on YouTube. Type in Ballmer, that's B-A-L-L-M-E-R, and developers, and you will be entertained for literally minutes.
And the next time you hear the word developers, you will not be able to not think of
it's actually kind of frightening.
But
Steve Ballmer's an intense guy.
Yes, and again, another important person in the development of the tech industry. But we're going to focus on Gates here. I'm totally off track.
Back to Gates.
Sorry, I made the joke. But.
So Gates, he's interested in computers. He's at Harvard. He's working on developing programming languages based off of BASIC.
Yes.
Then junior year rolls around and he decides he'd rather focus on the computing aspect and less on his studies. So he drops out.
And that's when he hooks up with another giant in the tech industry,
yes.
Paul Allen.
Right.
And founds a little company you probably heard of.
Called Microsoft.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's all the way back to 1975. Now, when people think Microsoft now, they're probably mainly thinking of Windows.
Yes.
But this is decades before Windows becomes a player at all. But they were interested in operating systems. It's just the operating systems they were looking at were all text-based operating systems.
Like DOS.
DOS, exactly.
Disk operating system.
Now, if you've never used DOS, then and if your knowledge of operating systems mainly comes from graphic-based interfaces like Windows or the Mac operating system, DOS required you to learn certain commands that you would use to navigate through and find files and execute files.
And stay, sit, heal.
It was kind of a labyrinth that you had to go through. You had to really learn a lexicon, if you will, of commands. But here's the flip side of it. It was lightning fast.
Oh, yeah.
Because you didn't have to worry about driving graphics or anything like that. The operating system was just amazingly fast. Even if you were running an older machine, you weren't waiting around forever for someone to execute.
But this is where computers got their reputation for being difficult to use.
Right.
Which, again, if you're younger, you might not remember a time when that was a deal. But, this was a problem that plagued early computer manufacturers like IBM when they entered the personal computer market was, oh, well, why would I want to do that? Computers are hard to use. Well, of course, you had to learn all these DOS commands, and it just wasn't very intuitive.
No. So we're jumping ahead quite a few years here because it was several years to develop the graphics-based interface, although other companies had taken a stab at it before Microsoft did. Xerox was one of them, and even Apple with the Macintosh operating system had found ways of using a graphic-based interface. But the thing about IBM-based computers, which eventually morphed into PCs, That's what enterprises had adopted. Those were the computers that businesses picked up because they were really really seen as kind of utilitarian. They weren't the sexy computers of the Macintosh world, but no. They were known as workhorses. So you've got all these, you know, you've got a huge customer base already built into this. And so when Microsoft Windows came out, everyone thought of it as revolutionary, even though technically it had been done before.
Yeah, that's one thing to remember about Bill Gates is that while he was interested in programming up front, he's definitely a shrewd business person.
Oh, definitely.
And he can recognize a market when he sees it. Part of the reason that the funny thing is, and this is really from personal experience, part of the reason that PCs were so popular with enterprises was because they were hard to use. They seemed like they were serious business machines.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were for creating spreadsheets and crunching numbers. And that's what you do at a business is, you know, because they didn't have Facebook yet.
Right. and Gates was very shrewd at forming partnerships with computer manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to get the Windows operating system off on computers as soon as they were coming off of the lines, so the production lines. So suddenly now you have an operating system that's on most of the computers that are out there. By default, most people are going to be familiar with that system over any other because that's the default operating system. You know, you didn't have a whole lot of choices. It was either going to be a Macintosh or a PC that's running some sort of Microsoft operating system.
That's right. Microsoft actually got into the DOS business first.
Right.
They had their own brand of DOS, MS-DOS, which I believe was purchased primarily. But I think Bill Gates actually did some work on that in the coding department because
yeah.
this was still in the early days, and he wasn't all into the administration part of it yet. But then Microsoft was also in the business of writing applications for a host of different systems, like, I don't know, this little thing called the Macintosh. And
sure.
For a long time, the best business software for the Mac was all the Office suite. That's where it got its start.
Right.
So they, you know, before it decided to crush the living daylights out of Apple, Microsoft
right.
actually used Apple as a starting point. You know, they made a lot of money from the Apple computers. They actually did stuff for the Apple II as well.
Right, right.
So, you know, we're talking IBM PCs, you know, the operating system plus, applications for the Mac and for other Apple computers. So he, you know, Bill pretty much had a grasp on everything he needed to get a good foothold in the computer market.
Yeah. And when he started bundling things together, Microsoft products together with the Windows system, it was pretty much game over at that point for a lot of different software companies.
Oh, sure.
Because automatically you have a leg up. You don't suddenly the user, when they buy the computer and bring it home, plug it in, turn it on. There's a whole suite of programs right there that they can use. And usually there was some sort of trial version and you could purchase a full version later. But it meant that you didn't have to go out shopping for these programs. You had your word processor there and you had your spreadsheet application there. And actually Microsoft caught a lot of flack for that. There were a lot of antitrust lawsuits being thrown around, saying that it was not fair that Microsoft not only had a stranglehold on the operating system market, but also the applications market.
Well, if you don't believe us, there are things that were essentially speed bumps for Microsoft to get where it is today. And those things are called WordPerfect.
Yes.
And 123, Lotus Notes.
123, yeah.
And Netscape.
Yeah.
And these companies, again, if you're younger and are not familiar with these companies, they were huge in their individual markets. But as soon as Microsoft came out with a competitor, and the more integrated the operating system became, it had leverage over people who really didn't want to go looking for other stuff. And face it, we're creatures of convenience.
Yeah. And you think about it, the operating system, they could design the operating system to work so well with these applications and have these applications work so well with each other. So well being a relative term. I mean, if you've used Word and tried to import stuff from PowerPoint or Excel, you might disagree. But in general, working really well together, you can see where that would seem like a completely unfair advantage because they can build everything so that their programs work flawlessly. Not only that, but there were allegations every now and then that Microsoft was going to great lengths to build in systems that would hamper other programs so they wouldn't run as well on Windows.
Yeah, I've heard conspiracy theorists say that they that Microsoft actually built the IT industry on purpose,
right,
fostering Windows certification programs by having so much buggy software.
Yeah, people who bought the first part of Vista might agree with you.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So moving on. So anyway, so Gates is in the lead here, and as Paulette pointed out, he was moving on into a more administrative role, although he was still the chief software architect for Microsoft for many more years.
Oh, sure. But I'd like to point out to all those people who said that people shouldn't pick on Bill Gates because he wrote Windows, he didn't write Windows.
No, he did not.
He did not write Windows.
He was very good at championing it.
Oh, sure. He's outstanding at basically everything he's done. He's, you know, gone from the software programmer to, you know, an administrator to a marketing genius.
Yes, to
except for
Seinfeld's, you know, good buddy.
I was going to say taking a shower in his shoes,
right,
trying to soften him up.
They run tight.
Yeah, they do.
The conquistadors.
But yeah, I mean, it's obvious the effect that he and his company. Of course, he wouldn't have been able to do this without thousands and thousands of extremely talented people. But he built that company with some pretty amazing minds.
And here's an interesting point I wanted to bring up. Now, of course, we talked about Jobs last week, and we're talking about Gates now.
Right.
One of the things I wanted to point out as a difference between the two is that, in a way, you could say that Jobs created a company that almost revolves around him at this point. Like, if Jobs were to leave the company or something were to happen to him, you would see the shares drop pretty dramatically. Most people think, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Gates, however, created a company and then, according to people within Microsoft, tried to build a company that could continue and be successful even without his direct influence.
Sure.
So, in a way, Jobs created a cult and Gates created a company.
Right.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. And here's another thing that I should point out. He had a style that was very much like Jobs' style in the sense that he had extremely high expectations for everyone who worked for him.
Absolutely.
And he was not shy about pointing it out when you failed to meet those expectations.
No.
And there are several reports that came out of Microsoft from former workers who said that Gates doesn't tend to dole out positive reinforcement that often, but he will be very quick to point out when he thinks you're not doing the right thing. And someone else pointed out, they said, if Gates argues with you,
right,
that's not a bad thing because it means that he cares. It's
right.
When Gates doesn't talk to you or doesn't bring anything up that you need to start worrying.
Right.
So I'm like, well, wow. Scary guy. The word that most people use is intense.
Yeah. Yeah. Nonetheless, Microsoft does have a reputation of taking pretty good care of its employees.
Yes.
And it's got a reputation for being a very good place to work, a place where people have been able to do, to try new projects and things, not maybe on the same, in the same way that Google has. But
no,
I think Microsoft is directly responsible for a lot of the office atmospheres like Google.
Oh, definitely.
Because people were willing to take a chance on the, you know, what happens if we nurture our employees, sort of.
Well, one of the things Gates discovered was that, I mean, he was thinking back to his college environment.
Sure.
And it was that if you have all the things that you enjoy when you're of, you know, the early 20s or whatever around you at work, you're less likely to want to go home at the end of the day. You may just stick around and do a couple more hours of coding because, you know, you've got some fun stuff around the office to keep you, you know, distracted once in a while so you don't get totally burned out. So, you know, Microsoft in the early days, they had like pinball machines and stuff in the office. And it, sure enough, it worked. I mean, he had coders who would work insane number of hours each week.
Yeah.
And they didn't mind the fact that they weren't going home. Most of them didn't have really any families at this point. They were young. They were just out of college. So this is the same sort of atmosphere you see companies like Google kind of promoting today. And part of it is, yeah, you're nurturing your employees. But another part of it is this is a good way for us to get the absolute most out of the people who work for us with just some simple investments.
Well, that's true. And I I want to say, too, that for the longest time, I'll admit this, you know, especially as a Mac person and someone who only has used Windows computers, or at least primarily has used Windows computers at work.
So a member of the cult.
Yeah. And I was a member of another cult before that called the Amigans.
Yes.
But, you know, I think a lot of people for a long time had this impression that Bill Gates, especially with the company being as monolithic as it is in the industry, that Bill Gates is this really tough, you know, very staid, buttoned up kind of guy. And as it turns out, he's got a lot of other interests and a lot of he cares for other people, too. I didn't realize until I started doing the research on this that he founded Corbis, the stock photography company.
Right.
And
yeah.
still has a hand in it. So he's a, you know, a photography enthusiast.
Sure.
And of course, he's a philanthropist, too,
yes,
on a scale that most philanthropists never even touch.
Yeah, it's beyond even the Ted Turner level. It's pretty impressive. Yeah, he founded co-founded the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yes, Melinda French was an employee of Microsoft.
Yes.
And they were married on January 1st, 1994.
Right.
And have three kids.
Yes.
And that's something, you know, he's a family guy, but, you know, Bill and Melinda together founded this foundation.
And it's all about investing in ways to improve health worldwide. So they're not focusing on just one community or anything like that. They have a genuine desire to promote health across the entire world. I mean, that's a very noble pursuit.
Absolutely.
And the fact that he's pouring billions of dollars into this. I mean, there was one interview where he said he gave $36 billion to the foundation. That's, I mean, I can't even imagine that much money. I mean, I can't imagine $1 billion, let alone 36.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually more money than the auto manufacturers were asking for as a group.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. From the government. But they also are involved in educational pursuits as well. Mm-hmm. They have donated a lot of computers and software to schools that are underserved by computer technology.
Sure.
And they are interested in solving – actually, there's sort of a merger in between. They're interested in solving a lot of these problems, medical problems, with technology, finding technological means to solve some of these problems. So it's pretty amazing, some of the stuff he's done. And you know, of course, he's had to scale back on his work at Microsoft.
So. Yeah. In fact, he's in 2006, he named Ray Ozzie as the new chief software architect, which was kind of the beginning of his transitioning away from Microsoft in a lead role. Steve Ballmer, who we mentioned way early in the podcast,
developers.
He's the new CEO. Gates is still the chairman.
Sure.
But he's decided to scale down his work at Microsoft. He's probably only putting in maybe 40-hour weeks now instead of like the 90-hour weeks he used to do. So, yeah, it was June 27th, 2008 that he transitioned out of being the head of the company at that point and to focus more upon the foundation and his other philanthropic pursuits.
Right.
I actually saw his final keynote address at CES last year. And it was very entertaining. They had a full video about what Gates' last day would probably be like and what his retirement would be like. And it involved him calling up lots of celebrities and giving them advice that they did not want nor need. And
Was Jerry Seinfeld in it?
Jerry Seinfeld was in it.
Uh-huh.
There's the big surprise. So that's the other thing, is that Gates seems to have a real sense of humor about himself, especially now. I mean, maybe if you went back to the 1980s Gates, he would have been a little more focused and
intense.
But these days, he's really willing to poke fun at himself in various ways, and which is very clear from that video and from the Jerry Seinfeld commercials, where it didn't seem to be promoting anything at all, really. It was just these odd commercials that didn't really go anywhere, and they weren't promoting anything. At the time, it was kind of to take the sting out of an issue that people had with Windows Vista, which of course was one of the latest versions of the Windows operating system. A lot of people considered it to be inferior because early on there were several issues with Windows Vista. People were having problems with it crashing. There were some security issues. It got a lot of bad press. And because of that, a lot of the enterprise systems, you know, a lot of the businesses decided to hold off on adopting Windows Vista. And they stuck around with like Windows XP or one of the other forms of Windows rather than upgrading to the latest version. And so that's kind of what's interesting now is that Windows 7 is already coming out in like next year. I think it's supposed to be December 2009, so maybe not 2010 just yet.
Yeah.
But
it may be this year by the time you're listening to this.
Right. Well, and but yeah, so Windows 7 coming out that quickly, because Vista hasn't been out that long. I mean, usually you've got a few years between versions.
We have, you know, Windows 95, Windows 98,
yeah.
2000. So, you know.
But apparently, even Bill Gates occasionally lets people know when he thinks the products Microsoft releases are not up to snuff. He's sent emails before complaining about having problems installing certain software programs using the Windows system and saying there shouldn't be a problem doing this, fix it. So when your former, you know, CEO and current chairman sends those emails, I guess you tend to listen.
Yeah, that's true.
Interesting guy.
Yep. And, you know, just another interesting thing about Bill Gates is that he's an author.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And, well, that kind of leads well into our sponsor.
Yes. We were going to talk about audible.com.
Yes. You can go to www.audiblepodcast.com/stuff to sign up over at audible.com. You get a free download. They have thousands and thousands of audiobooks, and we've picked out two that Bill Gates wrote himself.
Yes, one of those is Business at the Speed of Thought, Using a Digital Nervous System by William H. Gates III.
Yes, and mine is The Road Ahead by Bill Gates. And that's Gates's take on how the internet will affect all of our lives in various ways. Now, you can get either one of those or any other Audible book at audible.com for a free download if you sign up at www.audiblepodcast.com/stuff.
All right, then. I guess that's about all we've got for Bill Gates.
Yeah, the old 1-2 swing, Jobs and Gates. Okay, so you're a Mac guy.
Yeah.
I'm a PC guy.
Yeah.
So you're Justin Long and I'm John Hodgman. Did doing research for this, does that change your opinion at all about the cult of Jobs or –
I'm still a Mac OS guy.
Yeah.
But
so you like giving money to the least philanthropic company?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I have a Mac too. I like my Mac. I enjoy Macs.
And I have a PC too.
Yeah, so we're not really as divided as we come across. Here's the thing, you've used Macs for most of your computing post Amiga, yeah. And I've used PCs for most of my computing post Apple IIe.
Right.
So that's really where we're coming from. But we both recognize the value of the other systems. And truly, we would not be here at this job if it weren't for Jobs and Gates.
That's true.
So thank you guys. Awesome. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. So if you guys want to learn more about these topics, you can read all about everything you can imagine on computers.
How PCs work.
Right. At howstuffworks.com right now. And we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at nissanusa.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks,
Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.